Didn't miss much down in Foxborough today.
I heard you talking about it. No thanks. You know, I don't want to watch those guys walk around in, you know, just shorts and hats.
Yeah, you've done that before, number one. Number two, we had a Mac Hollins sighting in the wild. Not that that was that exciting. Yeah. And number three, when I came in, post-Morgan Moses interview, I too wondered, well, why would you tell fans to come on a day like this? Like, look, if they want to be there, we're just going to be doing a walkthrough. Got a big one tomorrow night with the in-stadium practice for the fans, which should be dialed up a little bit. But
I hope so.
It wasn't much to watch today.
Yeah, no. I get that. But it's, you know, maybe an opportunity for guys to sign autographs, that kind of thing.
There was a lot. They did the lap.
I heard you mention earlier, I hope tomorrow's night's game is actually somewhat, scrimmage, is actually a scrimmage.
I think it will be.
Because the last 10 years have been big stinkers.
Big stinkers.
And waste of time.
Almost middle fingers to the people that took the time to come out and had tickets and felt like they were at something.
Agreed.
But anyway, that's a topic for a different day. It's 3 o'clock. That means it's time for our three-point stance.
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bang!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pasternak, a hat trick, and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer, and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman, Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or Brezbot is still charging right now, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. As it is, 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons. Three hosts, three opinions on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Our order for today's three-point stance is Andy Hart, then Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and then Ted Johnson. Andy Hart, you will lead us off. You have 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
Heck yeah.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
So we all know the most important person in Foxborough. It's not Mike Vrabel. It's not Robert Kraft. It's not anybody other than Drake May. We know that. We watch that. We see that. We live that. And I like what I'm seeing. And I know I've mentioned some things about missing the easy throws. And then I listened to Drake May meet with the media today. And what did Drake May bring up?
Throws that I wish I had back, missed some touchdowns, you know, two practices ago in the red zone. There's just, that's what you're out here for. You know, I harp myself on trying to make those throws and make the easy ones. But
thank you, Drake May. Yeah. He's even acknowledging the things he needs to do better. He's talked about being a passer longer, not running downfield, remaining a passer and then running. Now he notes exactly as I did the other day. You can't miss those easy throws in the red zone. That's the difference between Drake May becoming a great quarterback, the Patriots becoming a much better football team, are those throws. Drake May has not turned the ball over through 8 practices yet. You know who I know is harping on that? Josh McDaniels. Drake May is learning. Drake May is growing. Drake May is leading. Remember who leads the sprints every day?
Oh, yep.
Drake May. Patriots fans, there's a lot of questions about this team. You should be getting more excited by the day about Drake May.
Can I tell you a nice little something? Not only was he the only guy in a lid today down there at the helmet-free bucket hat, shoes, and sandals walkthrough for everybody.
Is that because it has his camera on it? I see the footage now of you get to look at practice through the eyes of
it's
Drake
kind of
May.
It's kind of fun, actually.
It's sick.
One of the many additions that Pat's content team, who's doing a great job this preseason, has brought. I'll say this. He made an extra point of signing extra autographs and then at one point went over to a bunch of kids and said, here you go, buddy. Sorry there wasn't much action out there, but hopefully you'll see us tomorrow night in the stadium. That's going to be fun. Like Ted,
he's dialed in.
St. Bregman and the Duke of Drake.
He feels he's more comfortable. He last year he was a backup. He was told he was a backup. I mean, it was.
And the deck is clear. No more Joe Milton.
And so he's a different guy.
Go be comfortable. You should be comfortable.
He had no interceptions. And do you remember how many interceptions he had in his first OTA practice?
Four.
He had four.
Yes.
And so he has zero to start the first 8 days of training camp.
Duck boats.
So that bodes well for him for sure. And you know, what's interesting? The video you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's one on. What did you say it was for? The video that is attached to his helmet?
They've put some out on social.
Why do you think they do that?
To let you tell me why they think they do that.
To teach. What are you seeing? So
Coaches
can see where he's seeing.
Right.
And if that's where the reads, is he looking the reads the right way?
And to make money.
You're supposed to be looking
money.
Over
the Yeah, like, why are you looking
over
here?
What are you looking at on the right? We told you to look left.
Couldn't you clearly see his growing, one of his favorite targets, as I was talking about, Ted, how much they're throwing to the running backs? Travion Henderson was there.
Yeah.
There definitely has been a bit of a, and again, what do we know from eight practices over 8 days? Only a few of which have had contact, right?
More than what we knew a week ago.
That's a very fair point. It looks like a take-the-profit approach is developing.
Yes, which I don't want to attribute because that was a big Mac Jones thing. Remember when he used to say, as long as you always take a profit, you'll never go broke
so
or whatever.
He's so full of it because the quick game.
Wash that away.
But I heard the quick game effing sucks, or so he said on national television.
You know who effing sucked?
Who?
Him.
Why did I walk into something I knew the answer to?
Yes, dear ball.
Nailed it. No, we're good to go. So we have that on the table. Drake May and some optimism.
You think that'll
go
viral? Now, if you post that on the internet, will people be like, great take, Andy. Good. I think you grew. Are you 2 inches taller today? You're not as short as you looked in the other one when you said trade Christian Campbell. No, they never give you
Andy
compliments.
Andy must be getting more rest. He seems level-headed today.
They just
chill, Bill. You're out of control.
That guy's voice was awesome.
Yeah. That's going to, just to give everybody a preview, that's going to be in the rotation often. As much as you need it, Andrew, that's going to be in the rotation.
Jay from Rhode Island just became a drop? That's an honor, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We were having a conversation before the show. How do we suggest to Andy that maybe he needs to slow down? And Jay in Rhode Island answered that question.
We ran through a lot of different sound effects, but Jay definitely wins, takes the cake.
Yeah, we love an organic drop. All right, Fitzy, are you ready?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
Well, you know what? This is the perfectly timed second take here on the three-point stance because I'm going to dovetail off of Mr. Positive's take on Drake May and the way he is growing and developing in front of our eyes and say that is just one of the many positives people can take away from the first week of Patriots Camp 2025. And as you heard in the Morgan Moses interview, good vibes, great camaraderie, good competition as well. And I got to say, I think all of this comes back to, as they like to say, rot comes from the top down. I'm going to say positive and optimism and energy all come from the top down as well. And I'm going to reattribute it back to the head coach, Mike Vrabel. When you're head coach, as opposed to back during the days when they were, winning Super Bowls and going to the playoffs all the time, a coach that would never be seen, a coach that didn't want anything to do with the media and held them in disdain, a coach that reviled the fans, even though, yes, he was a legend and a legacy in and of himself. Mike Vrabel is out there signing autographs, talking to people, doing selfies and FaceTime videos. The energy and the optimism that he is now spreading throughout this camp is contagious. Yes, folks, we have great vibes at Pat's camp, and I hope they keep up.
Me too.
Jeez, you too.
Well, I was just going
to
say.
It's really fun to be down there. Like everybody is smiling. Even Mike Giardi and Paul Perillo were in a good mood today. Now, maybe that's because you weren't there.
But. And all this dissipates in early September if they lose to the Raiders like 35-3.
Well, what if it goes the other way? Because the text line pointed out, when you asked me, post-Morgan Moses interview, vibe check, and were there any good vibes last year? And I said, yeah, I think they went away when they lost to the Seahawks. A texter, I forget where, maybe it was the 207, said the good vibes were derailed after the week one win. And that's kind of tracks because there was that goofy Mayo video of like, got him! And everyone started laughing at the coach, and then they got out-coached and outplayed, and then it just went into a death spiral.
I thought last year the good vibes may have derailed when he said the comment about Drake May won the job, but our starting quarterback is Jacoby Brissett. I thought right there it was like, oh, what the hell are you? What do you say? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, out of your mind?
Like that needed a Ted Johnson. Are you out of your mind? You're telling the public that one quarterback won the job. And the other one is going to start. And you think this is going to go well from here on out. I thought that's when the train went off the tracks.
Yep. Probably so. And I'll validate your opinion on that, Fitzy. I mean, I've talked to front office people when I was at practice a couple days ago. I talked to several coaches. And they all were kind of coy about it at first. But eventually they all got to the final conclusion is that things are different because Mike Vrabel's here. So it's not it's not that big of a surprise, but it's still good to hear that. You know, we can see that. You can see Vrabel's impact, but until you hear from the people behind the scenes in the know and they confirm that, you don't really know. And so I got confirmation that that's the case from several different front office and coaches when I was
there. I would just like to also point out twitch.tv/BostonWEI, John the Car, great caller. Great participant in there as well. Autographs. Stacey James appreciates Fitzy's work today. You have to remember that early on in the process,
good call, John.
Fan service. Go after yourself. Fan service definitely plays a factor in the equation, especially when an organization feels like, or a fan base feels, either maybe not betrayed, but you know what I mean? Like, Pats fans felt done wrong for a million different reasons. And at least now, I think there's a nice reconnection between, or so we hope there's a nice reconnection between fans and sports team. And now maybe, just maybe, they'll be able to build on that. And of course, nothing matters if they look like garbage for the next month.
It's fleeting.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. I mean, it's a house of cards. I mean, right now it's going pretty good. But Danny, your point, you're absolutely right. If you don't win, it means nothing.
I will say though, the vibes.
Exactly.
I think they trickle down. I think one of the texters said triple down vibonomics. Like, if Vrabel's bringing the right vibes, and that goes to McDaniels, and then that goes to May, and then that goes to the rest of the offense, well, then that's how it's supposed to work, right? That's the guidance and the leadership and the confidence and all those things.
I mean, but look at the old, you know, when the old coach was here, you know, BB was here. I mean, if you looked at the end of the career, in his career here, the players that were on that roster, did they take up the personality of their head coach? I mean, or were they these big personalities like those early 2000 teams? No, they all took the personality of their head coach. They were scared to say anything. They were as paranoid as the head coach was, because he puts that in you. So you take the cue and the lead from your head coach.
I appreciate more times than not. Thunder in the organization.
Nope. Yeah, oh, that's right.
That's when the vibes died last year.
Yep. Well, that's where the question marks.
5 minutes.
Literally.
And cash. Ready to burn some cash.
Oh, and then he redied that.
If you don't think you can, for the most part, figure out how a head coach's tenure is going to go just by their opening press conference, more times than not, you can tell.
Yep.
It's a lot of times they just give themselves away in those opening press conferences.
The one outlier is Nick Sirianni.
I was going to say Philly.
Because it was a clown show, and he's been to two Super Bowls and won one of them.
No
doubt. That might be an argument for, if you give a clown coach the best roster in football, even he can't screw it up.
Young Thundercat.
Or at least the best line. That does beg this question, just sort of outside the AFC East momentarily. Do you think there's any chance the new coach who had the biggest clown show presser this year, Liam Cohen in Jacksonville,
no doubt,
any chance that they could be a turnaround candidate, or is that just is his say, the way he said Duval going to be rubbed in his face all year?
I mean,
Duval.
They did add supposedly the prospect in, you know, years to come into the NFL, a two-way player.
Yeah.
So if you continue to build talent around him, okay, maybe. But I'm dubious. Say dubious.
You've got BTJ as well. Like, Trevor Lawrence has what he needs to succeed this year as far as the weaponry goes. Yeah. But, yeah, we'll see. I know vibes only go so far, boys. And if it's Raiders 37, Pats 10, September 7th, then take your vibes and blow them out the back door. But we're off to a good start, Andrew.
And we appreciate the optimism from both of you. Fitzy, I'm used to it from you. Andy, I'm still kind of getting used to this character, and we'll see what tomorrow brings.
It's my Bo Nose shirt. I think it brought out the good in me.
We'll see what happens when the wind changes tomorrow. Teddy, you ready?
Great point, Dan. Yes, I'm ready.
That's what we love to hear. Save that drop, and for that, you get 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, guys. So a couple days ago, a very tragic incident. A 27-year-old Shane Tamura went into the 345 Park Ave NFL headquarters there in Midtown Manhattan with a semi-automatic rifle, and killed four people, injured a fifth, and then ultimately took his own life. He left a three-page note to criticize the NFL for concealing sports safety issues that mentioned CTE, the degenerative brain disease that is linked to repetitive hits to the head or brain trauma. Supposedly, he felt like he had CTE and said he was a former NFL player in this note. There is no evidence to that, that he played in the NFL. He did play in high school, I guess, in Granada Hills. He also said in this three-page note that after he took his own life, he shot himself in the chest so that he could his brain would be intact so that they could study it. He asked for people to study his brain, and that he was sorry. This is tragic stuff, and I will say this. I can be hard on the NFL. The NFL did not deserve this. This is, you know, for someone like this to just say that it's CTE, it's amazing to me how many people I run into that say they play high school football and think they have CTE. That is a prevailing thought. The one thing that worries me about incidents like this, like the Aaron Hernandez, and when that happened, that case, when he was being judged, he said he claimed CTE as a defense. What it does is it kind of puts down the guys that really do have problems And so this is an unfortunate, sad thing. But this has to have the NFL rattled. Not only did obviously four employees die, which is tragic in and of itself, but just that there's someone that was willing to claim a brain disease that is linked to playing football was the reason why he wanted to go kill people is incredible to me. And I can't imagine how scared they are. I've talked to a lot of big-time writers that cover the NFL in this league, and they've told me time and time again, Ted, what the thing that scares the NFL owners more than anything is what you went out on and talked about was concussions. They are worried about moms and dads not letting their kids play football. And so they do not want this type of information being out there and being talked about. And so this has got to scare them behind closed doors. We're not going to probably hear a lot of reporting on it, but to me, this has got to have them terrified that someone would use this as a motivational tactic, claiming CTE and go do something so horrific. Thank you.
Perfect.
For giving me a little extra time there. Appreciate
yeah, no,
that.
It was a serious topic that I think deserved the extra time. And, you know, it's come at a time where we've kind of been caught up in training camp. We've been caught up with the trade deadline and the Red Sox. And it is. It's an interesting issue. And you just said something there, and I'm going to use your claiming CTE pushed them to do it. Do you believe – I don't know how I want to ask you this. Do you believe CTE can push people to do those things, or is it an excuse for other issues?
I worry it's an excuse.
Okay.
And it's hard to quantify how much CTE, whatever your brain trauma, it's hard to quantify how much of the brain trauma that you receive mm-hmm. by playing football is the reason that you went and act out.
Right.
Aaron Hernandez, I don't think he murdered people because he played football and got CTE. Could it be a small contributing factor? I'm willing to go there. But I'm not willing to say it was the main cause or main reason for people doing that what they do.
Because there's a concoction. There's mental health. Just first of all, mental health issues that lots of people that never touched a football field or a football helmet deal with on a daily basis.
Predisposed,
right?
Mm-hmm. Genetically,
right. And then right? other issues.
And
drugs, maybe, alcohol, and different things that can affect your body.
Environment,
environment. Right, mm-hmm. like father issues, things, and it does seem...
It was the perfect cocktail for, I think, Aaron Hernandez.
Aaron Hernandez, yeah. But I also don't know this guy's perfect cocktail, what drove him to do... you know, for example, in a similar tragic event when the guy assassinated the United Healthcare CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that wasn't CTE related. You know what I mean? Like, these things happen in a lot of walks of life.
He became a grotesque cult hero to people.
Right. And so there's just a lot of layers to all of this. Yeah. But I do think you also touched on something, and this is a total side topic we don't have time for today, but this supposedly done deal or happening deal between the NFL and ESPN, they're taking over the NFL Network. ESPN, the NFL is getting a 10% stake in Disney, which is ESPN. Yeah. That
How
means
much?
This stuff won't be covered.
Oh, it's exactly
like
right.
At least not from Don Vannata and some of the people at ESPN. If they try to look into this stuff, I guarantee you they will be cut off.
It's
a big issue with Chris Nowinski, my buddy that runs Concussion Legacy Foundation. He always talks about how the media covers concussions, and it's a big thing with him. Bob Costas doesn't do NFL games anymore; hasn't for years. Because of his stance on how the NFL talks and covers concussion issues, and I will say this lastly on the topic, the thing that scares the NFL more than anything, which I don't think they're donating money to the NIH anymore, which I think they were for a long time, is to study in trying to find imaging technology so that they can detect CTE in living. Right now, it's postmortem.
Right,
and so if they ever were able to invent a imaging technology to detect CTE in the living, I think it would be a game changer. Mm-hmm. I think if you could go in and see into little Johnny's brain, you know, after a concussion and playing a game in his freshman football game and see that there was damage there, I think that's it. I think the game of football could potentially be, of all the things that people say, oh, this is going to end football, this is the one thing, if it happens, I could see that ending football.
And I would love to know why. This is obviously for minds greater than ours, collectively or individually. How and why they can't detect it until they're able to autopsy the brain post-mortem. I don't know why there isn't that imaging technology.
I mean, you have to ask a pathologist. I'm not sure.
I know. But I would love to.
But it is the game changer. It's the absolute.
To me, it is.
Like when you get your ankle MRI or whatever, if they have that, and then they come back with an image for the mother and circle this and say,
this is
see this
is.
Right here?
That's it.
The mother goes, nope, you're never playing. It's part of my thing. Because I'm guessing, I believe in technology, that that'll come. I don't know when it comes. If I believe that a spaceship is headed towards Earth, this imaging will come. Yep. And
everyone's trying to claim that they're the first. But
it's part of my belief that flag football will be football in 20 years, 40 years, 60 years, whatever that year total is.
I would never say that unless that actually happened. If actually did find that imaging technology, then I would agree with you.
Stiz.
Because two things can be true at the same time. Some of these people that have done horrible things to themselves and others, some of that could have been brought on by CTE. However, not everyone that has CTE is out here doing horrible things to themselves and others.
Correct. Okay. Sorry to end on a somber note, but it's a topic we needed to talk about, an issue we needed to address here, especially with Ted's sort of intimate knowledge of the topic and his connections. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, it is Thursday. It is 3:30. It is trade deadline day. We'll continue to monitor that with Dan Ball at the trade desk, but we also will talk to Tom Curran after a week of Patriots training camp practice plus, and after saying that we are wrong-headed radio 2-6 on WEEI, so we'll get back with Tom Curran shortly. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending. WEEI Afternoons, wrong-headedness radio, according to Tom Curran.
Where does he get off?
And Tom Curran will join wrong-headed radio right now. Drains by James is Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom Curran, you didn't care for my concerns about the offensive line, I take it?
Well, I need them to be delivered firsthand.
Okay.
Because they were delivered in a way that made it sound like you think they're worse than last year. And that can't be a fact.
He does.
I think they could be worse than last year because Morgan Moses has concerned me for the start of camp here. His inability to block the little speedy guys off the edge, Chasen and Landry. You don't have David Andrews as a mainstay in the middle, and you've kind of had some moving pieces there, Bradberry or this Jared Wilson phenom thing. You basically, compared to last year, all you have is Mike Onwenu. Everybody else is new. You got this fancy, shiny left tackle that we want to love, but people have concerns about, A, his arm length and all that, but also his ability to block. And now it looks like you're going to start two rookies right out the gates on the left side there. And I'm already seeing reps from guys like DeMontre Jacobs and other questionable talents who at least waited until later in the season before they were relevant last year.
So you're alleging that the guys who were playing last year from that offensive line that could be better than this one are not great options. This is an offensive line that had Vidarian Lowe at left tackle, nice guy, not a really top-tier football player, that a revolving door at left guard. David Andrews played four games. Onwenu was just off all season. And Layden Robinson and a cavalcade of average or below average at right tackle. Where do you get off?
Well, because I think it's very similar.
With overall pick.
I mean, what are you excited about?
A better offensive line?
Yeah. Like, other than Doug Marrone, I think the one known commodity that gives me confidence this line will be better.
I mean, I'm excited about one of the best tackles in college football being here. I mean, personally, excited I'm optimistic. Personally, I don't get excited. But I would say that if you're a Patriots fan, you should be encouraged by the fact that a guy who was taken fourth overall that the entire planet agrees was, worthy of being a first rounder is playing left tackle after the subpar nature of the position for years, that this kid Jared Wilson is locking down really good, talented players in training camp like Barmore and Milton Williams, that if it's not Bradberry, who probably is generally more durable than David Andrews, unfortunately for David last year, on when it was better, Moses is, certainly worthy of concern, but he's a better player than DeMontre Jacobs or Layden Robinson. So I just don't – there's a lot of stuff to manufacture nervousness about. The offensive line seems a really loose branch to bounce up and down on.
Okay. I mean, we don't need to belittle this. The one thing I would say, I've never manufactured an opinion in my life. I don't do that.
That's not your thing.
If I react, it's because I saw something on the field and started to look at it with sort of a certain lens, and that's how I feel. Yeah. But
worse, Andy?
I think it could be worse. Yeah, I really do. I think you're starting at a spot that is similar to last year and could spiral in a bad direction. But we can move on.
We're gonna put that on our shoulder, and we'll get back to that.
We'll talk to you again in October.
There you go. Let's revisit in October. Hey, Tom. You know, you clearly remember because you go to every single practice. In the first day of OTAs, Drake May, I feel like he had like four interceptions in that first practice. And so far in the last eight practices and training camp, he has no turnovers. Why such the dramatic improvement from then to now?
I think part of it, and they were picks. He deserved to have them called picks. I think luck is on his side right now, and bad luck was on his side on that day that he had the four picks. He could have gotten picked by Jabril Peppers, but I also think that I don't have a really good explanation for it because he's not taking check down after check down. He's throwing it to tight windows. He's throwing it to every single player that he could, whether it be Baker or Polk when they're out there, or Efton Chisholm, whether it be rookie Kyle Williams. Could we say maybe, possibly, that the corners are not dealing with this competent but not great group of wide receivers? I think that would be a stretch, too. I guess we eventually have to just say he's playing really good. To me, that's the Occam's razor answer. He's playing really good. So it is kind of stunning when you think about the high-leverage throws that he has made and put in there. And Andy, I do want to say, because I feel bad about saying manufactured. I was still joking, but not with my joking voice because I'm a little tired in the mid-afternoon. So no sorry worries. I said manufactured. No, definitely worries, and I can tell in the no worries answer that tone that you have when you're really pissed.
I was going to fire back, but I chose not to. I had a retort that would have elevated our anger here in our argument. So we'll just pass it along.
He'll be okay. He loves your time. He'll be all right.
All right.
Everything's
good. I did what I could. You know, I put my hand out across the aisle there.
I just feel like the kid in the back of the station wagon when the family's arguing up front, but that's fine. And you remember those good old days, Tommy. And from the back of the station wagon, I do want to bring up something I believe we can all agree is a legitimate concern, and that's cornerback depth. So now when you've got a load management sort of possibly injured Carlton Davis and you got a soft tissue injury early on with the hammy on Gonzo, are you a little worried, Tom, that, maybe we could be seeing meaningful reps from like the Isaiah Boldens and the Marcellus Dials down the line? Because that's not great.
No, we don't definitely know that's not great, but we certainly know it's not as great as having the guys out there that you
– right.
Have already spent money on and are going to spend an immense amount of money on.
Fair enough,
so
yes.
It's going from being like, you know, even conceivably a top five cornerback duo, at least top 10, mm-hmm. to 28th. If you have Marcellus Dial, Marcus Jones, and Alex Austin running around out there. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern, especially with every team being loaded at wide receiver that the Patriots have to deal with. So, that is a place that I would look at, and we're batting this around as the Patriots near their situation where they have to make some cuts, and we're probably going to discuss wide receivers, but they have a glut of competent but not great wide receivers who may become expendable. So do you look at a guy like Kendrick Bourne and say, you know, this guy might have some relevance someplace else, and we're going to have to release him because he doesn't play special teams. Maybe we can get a depth tackle. Maybe we can get a depth corner.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy like this. So to me, I think that's where Elliot Wolf, Ryan Cowden, and the rest of the personnel department has to start looking. Where are we really shallow? And I'd throw tight end in there too.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, with us here on WEEI Afternoons, and he has a good crystal ball because I was planning on going to the wide receiver position next. And Tom, if the offensive line doesn't blow up in our faces, I've seen some things from the wide receiver position, and some of it might be expectation-based, that the expectations are low, but I've seen some things that I kind of like. It's not hard for me to talk myself into Stephon Diggs, Pop Douglas, and Kayshon Booty with a little Kyle Williams mixed in. That sounds like it might be a decent wide receiver core to me.
I think they could be worse than last year.
Oh, you son of a gun!
Way to go, son of a gun!
No, I agree with you. And it'll be an offense too that is reminiscent of what we saw. I really think that Douglas is going to be the straw that stirs the drink. As much as Diggs is going to be a player that you're looking to frequently, and he'll be the guy who would get you on a great week a six catch 130 yard day if the Patriots end up having an NFL level offense this year. I do think that Douglas will be the player that defense is like, this guy on third down. They're always moving him around. They're always running him across the middle. They're always, you know, putting him in difficult places that stress us. So I really think that Douglas could be a big part of that offense. And it's funny you mentioned Booty. He just won't go away. Mm-hmm. He will not go away. And he catches everything. He blocks well downfield, as does Kyle Williams. So there is great reason for optimism that it should be an offense. And I keep saying this year after year, you got to score 24 friggin' points. And that's not a lot. I mean, Detroit scored 33 last year. Great offense, great coaching on that offense. But 24 points a game is not insane. Mm-hmm. You got to get to that point.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. And we hit the offensive line, the quarterback, the wide receivers. Why not? Let's just go for the last question for me, at least in the running backs. I mean, I look out there, and it just feels like there's obviously going to be a lot of checkdowns with Josh McDaniels. But you just see plays designed to get to the edge. You see a lot of creative screens. You see Travion Henderson, you know, running to the goalpost, hitting his head on the goalpost. How involved do you think this running back group's going to be? How does Ramondre Stevenson look? Just this group overall. What do you think of the profile of the running back position?
It's really interesting because they are reminiscent of the way the Patriots used to try to construct their running back room back in, you know, the last Super Bowl run and ones prior. Sonny Michel was your lead back. Rex Burkhead was your versatile changeup back, could go between the tackles or he could be a third down type. And then you had James White. This would follow the same suit with Ramondre Stevenson being your bell cow, Antonio Gibson being your you know, back and forth versatile back, but also kind of could carry the ball 15, 16 times. And I think Travion Henderson's early role would be kind of third down backish, but he could be like Rex Burkhead as well. So there's great versatility with all three backs. And as we know with running backs, somebody's going to get a ding at some point, so you're going to need all three. I'll be interested, too, to see if I always call him Larrigan, and that's not his name.
Number 34 from UC Davis.
Yep.
That's my guy.
Yeah, it's not Larrigan. It's not Larrigan.
Larrison.
Every friggin' time.
Yep.
Lan Larrison. Yep. Will have pertinence on this team. I would not be surprised if he makes the 53.
Yep.
As a kick returner and special teamer, just so you have some depth. And again, it's so friggin' maddening when you look at recent years. Why couldn't Pete Strong stay here? Why couldn't Kevin Harris stay here? Why were these guys who they drafted, Pierre Strong was an earlier pick, but they just were unusable. It's like City So. I think he's still on the team. I never see him. He was a starter 2 years ago. It's wild.
Yeah, Tom, last question for me real quick. I was making a point earlier, and yes, I think Lan Larrison, I think he was the leader in receptions for running backs last year in college football as well. So hopefully he makes a good impact. And just overall, I think the impact I'm most impressed by still is Coach Vrabel. And I was remarking earlier to the guys about how everything seems so much more positive down there. Am I crazy thinking that like the positivity down there begins with the energy displayed by the head coach and his competence?
I think it's not just the energy. I think the energy flows from a notion of competence and purpose everywhere. If you go someplace and you're not sure who the offensive line coach is, or how the offensive coordinator will do, or you're looking at a first-year defensive coordinator and a first-year head coach, and it's already been announced that it's a foundational year and the owner is saying, I hope we don't struggle, but we might struggle. That really does not put a lot of energy and hop in your step. But when you look at an offense right now that has head coaches and former head coaches and interim head coaches all over it and talented players imported and a guy who's in his second go-around after having had a year off to prepare for the second go-around, there's no way that everybody can't feel as if they've done an immense amount in the offseason to prepare for 2025, whereas 2024 was very much flying by the seat of your pants, and 2023 was just hoping against hope that the worst was not going to unfold, and it did. So I think it's probably relative. I think the confidence and enthusiasm is probably relative to what we've seen really since 2022. I mean, that whole offseason, too, we're going to go with no offensive coordinator. We'll figure it out as we go. So 2021 was kind of fun, and it's been 3 years since we've seen anything remotely close to it. So it's like getting outside for your hour of time out in the yard.
Tom, real quick before we let you go, are we expecting maybe a return to sort of the blue-white scrimmage tomorrow night at Gillette Stadium? It's been a few years since we had one of those. Is this going to be a competitive practice tomorrow night?
That's a good question. They had the walkthrough today.
Yeah.
They're going to have Saturday and Sunday off, so that's a great question. And the Senator Phil Perry also wonders the same thing. Ooh. He's not going to give him 2 days off in a row where they're not doing anything on 2 days off, is he? Ted, what do you think?
Nope. That is not. Ooh. No, Michael's harder than that. He's not as soft like that. Mm-mm.
All right, I'll take whichever team has Drake May as their quarterback. But we'll talk to you about it next week, Tom Karn, and keep an eye on that offensive line so we can continue our argument.
Thanks, Tom.
Oh, we will.
See you, Tom. Buddy. Tom Karn, NBC Sports Boston, with all his thoughts from Patriots training camp. We'll touch on that, including the running back position, where Fitzy got very excited to hear he and Tom Karn think there is a dark horse candidate to be in the backfield this year. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons. That was Tom Karn just moments ago here on WEEI Afternoons.
Fitzy and I both got excited.
I noticed. Apparently everybody loves little white guys, receiver, running back. That's the
You know what it is? He reminded me instantly of Rex Burkhead.
Yes.
He's even wearing his number, Ted. Yeah. Thank you. That's exactly what I've said.
The number doesn't hurt, but it was stylistically. And
aggressive, quick.
I got to follow Burkhead when we came to the Texans, so I was like, oh, look at that 34 guy. He looks just like Rex Burkhead. Okay,
I wonder if Josh sees the same thing. Yeah. Like, yeah, Burkhead was good, so let's get
my favorite. Maybe. My favorite non-Tom Brady Patriot over the last decade. I absolutely love the way Rex Burkhead played. I thought he was underappreciated and obviously a key addition for the offense. Andy, this kid, like, he's another one of these undrafted free agents. I know you don't want to, you know, talk up and cheerlead for Efton Chisholm and the Land Larrisons of the world, but right now, because there's a lot of other bigger fish to fry in Foxborough. But kid didn't lead college football in receptions from a running back.
I mean, it was
UC
Davis. Right. It wasn't Georgia.
Right. He knows what he's doing. I know. I'm just saying, as
you
an undrafted,
he's better than Ashton Gentry.
As an undrafted free agent, it's always.
Yes,
you know,
I'm
nice
happy to have him on my practice.
I'd say he has a chance. He has a chance.
He and Efton Chisholm are going to be great practice squad players. Oh, I look forward to them helping out on the practice field. Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. As luck would have it, Jared in Haverhill would like to talk about the running backs. What's up, Jared?
Hey, guys. How we doing?
Good, man.
What's up, buddy?
All right. So, can anyone, I think Teddy out of all you guys, who can tell me who saved the Patriots out of any issues, and he was a running back during your time? I'm going to go with JW for initials. Can anyone help me with that?
That would be James White once you give the initials.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. How did we win so many Super Bowls? James W. Let's get it twisted. No, hey, Tom Brady got bailed out how many times? Kevin Falk, James White. Yeah. Hey, guys, we have three studs that can be three-headed James White. Do the same exact thing that you did with him, but do it three times over, game over.
All right, thanks for the call, Jared.
My new favorite caller.
I think it was a little disrespectful to James White. James White was phenomenal. To say that each of these three guys is going to be as good as James White. Yep. James White, Ivan Fears thought James White was the best passing back they ever had, and they've had a lot of good ones.
Ooh, K-Falk.
K-Falk.
Come on now.
Shane Vereen helped you win a Super Bowl before he cashed in.
Yeah. He was excellent.
Danny Woodhead was good. Rex Burkhead had his opportunities in that role.
Yeah. J.R. Redmond might have helped Ted Johnson get his first Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, he did.
There's
he
been
did.
A lot of them.
Thank you, J.R., for catching that ball in the flat.
That's the part of this that I like is they're going back to some of the traditional, not the specific players, but traditional roles that worked with this team. They wanted to have a fullback. Now he's hurt and he's on IR. They want to have a passing back. They want to have a slot receiver. These were some of the staples, regardless of the individual names, of the Josh McDaniels, Charlie Weiss, Patriots offense over the years that had a lot of success. So I like that aspect of it. Now, if these guys are good enough, no idea. I have no idea if Pop Douglas can be Troy Brown and go out and catch 96 balls or whatever the hell it was. But I think they're looking to replicate some of that structure, I guess, of the offense around these guys.
And why wouldn't they? I mean, it was just, it made sense. There was, everyone had a defined role, which I think, always think you get better performance out of players that have defined roles.
Yep.
But, you know, baseball, you know, they know what position they're playing. You know, in football, they know kind of what situationally when they're going to be called upon. So, and you know what it does? When you have different styles of running backs, it keeps a defense off balance.
Like you.
They do. Right. Same. You know, it's we play the Tampa Bay Bucks, right? And you have Mike Allstott with.
Perfect. Work done.
It was like, okay, one stylistically so much different. But so it keeps a defense off balance. If you can have that kind of dynamic with your running back position, I think it benefits you.
All right, let's go to the Dan Ball trade desk. I believe we have a couple updates not involving the Boston Red Sox, but involving some of their competition and some rumors out there. What's up, Dan?
So stupid, but thank you. Yeah, so the...
I love it.
Yeah, fair enough. The Mets, they've acquired center fielder Cedric Mullins in a trade from the Orioles. He's hitting just over 200, but good defensive center fielder, so the Orioles continue to sell. Yes. The Yankees have acquired reliever Jake Bird from the Rockies, so they have added Bednar and Bird so far today. Bird's mid-4 ERA, but again, when you're pitching for the Rockies, you got to take that with at least maybe half a run's worth of a grain of salt.
The soul suck that is playing for the Rockies this
year. Big time. And then the other one, like you mentioned, Andy, it's not a trade, but it's a rumor. So this is from Francis Romero. He's a Spanish language reporter. He's been a BBWAA member since 2019. A decent enough source to say that the Arizona Diamondbacks are in talks with the Boston Red Sox about right-handed starting pitcher Merrill Kelly. So that is the latest that we've heard. No trades, but a rumor floating around about a Diamondback starter.
I take that over Charlie Morton. That's not Joe Ryan, but it's not Charlie Morton. It's
100%.
Somewhere in the middle.
Might
and I'm
be
happy.
A rental, yeah. though.
Okay, so what I don't are we, care about what that. I'm trying to win say, this year.
Well, we'd all like for them to win this year. I didn't say I didn't want him for that. Just wanted to qualify in terms of what we may ultimately find out to be the compensation, perhaps recalibrate because it's rental, not long term.
Yeah, I just care about adding good talent to help them win a wild card spot or maybe a division title because everybody else seems to be trying. Seattle, Toronto, New York,
Detroit.
Your own
division. Yeah.
They're all trying. They're all doing things to at least attempt to get better.
From the baseball nerd desk, which Dan Ball allowed me to scoot into for just a quick second, two reasons why you should be excited about Merrill Kelly. Not afraid to pitch on a big stage. One, pitched in the World Series just a couple years ago. And two, he was the starter for Team USA against Japan in the World Baseball Classic finale just a couple years ago. Pitched well.
So big cojones to line up behind Garrett Crochet, potentially. Speaking of big cojones, none bigger than Big Lou Merlone, top of the 4 o'clock hour. It is the best baseball interview you can get in Boston these days. He will join us. Hopefully there's a little angst with Lou Merlone because I know he's been tweeting daily and hourly that he wants moves, he wants additions, and he, like me, has not gotten what he wants yet. So Lou Merlone up next here with WEEI Afternoons.